What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Do they matter though? Yeah, I think fixtures provide opportunity.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello everybody, welcome to Planet FPL, the world where everything revolves around Fantasy Premier League. My name is Serge.
And my name is James.
It's Tuesday and it's fixtures day.
What's
in
the time?
Our build-up to the start of FPL, 11:35.
It's 11:40 a.m. and we mark that as important because who knows, the game might launch while we're doing this podcast.
It is
a genuine possibility. Do you know what's trending right now on Twitter?
Refresh. I don't know. No, launch FPL or something.
FPL ID is trended legitimately on Twitter.
Wow. I think what it shows is trending is personalized to what you follow a little bit as well. So I don't know if in the whole world it's trending more than some other stuff.
All right, you buzzkill.
But, you know, if people are desperate to get their IDs, let them get their IDs. Today we're talking about fixtures.
Yes.
Fixtures is something that you are quite deep into and enjoy because you have a fixture planning spreadsheet. More on that later because it's a useful tool that's available to Patreons. I don't get too heavily into fixtures when I'm planning. And the reason is because it's arbitrary. What statements that I really hate are like, so-and-so has got these fixtures, which is a good start, but they're just very casual in that there's no real thought process behind, are they good, are they not? It's basically, are they a lower half team or a higher table team? And then just, it's a good start or it's not. And I don't think there's ever enough depth in people's thought around fixtures. Like, I mean, a classic example is probably the FDR on the Premier League on fantasy itself, right? It's so arbitrary sometimes.
Who knows? It might be different when the game launches.
It might well be. And that's why sometimes I think we can get sucked into looking at fixtures and not actually looking at the story behind the fixtures and then making how many times have we held on to players because they've got good fixtures coming up and it ends
Everyone's
up kicking you in the cojones. So I suppose because of that, quite often I'm like, okay, I don't think you should overthink fixtures. Like, I think there's other things like form and the rest of the team that they're playing with are sometimes more important. So I suppose my point is it's lower on my list of criteria when deciding who to buy than maybe some others, whereas you obviously are quite heavily into your fixtures and plan well in advance and take a lot into consideration with fixtures. So interested in having a chat about it because we know the whole season's fixtures, although whether we're looking at the first 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks kind of depends on what you think they'll do with the World Cup as well.
Yes, we're not going to go into chip strategy now. The idea is we're going to do a full pod on that later in the week because we don't know if FPL are going to make any changes. So we will potentially touch on a couple of ideas of kind of perhaps first wildcard points, although there's some issues we're going to raise where it might be a little bit more difficult to navigate that first wildcard beyond the first couple of weeks than normal because of fixture swings and stuff and them not being actually as obvious. I'm going to ask you, Suj, talk about form. You got a player's in form, you want to keep him. Perhaps, you know, Jared Bowen goes on a great run, you want to keep him. You know he scored twice against Man City in game week 37, for example. Sometimes you've got a player who's great values, in great form, forget the fixture, doesn't matter. He's just a great asset, crack on. But where it feels like the game's heading at the moment is despite some of the unique pricing that they've done, which we'll touch on more tomorrow, we're going to head towards quite a, I would say, a Twitter community template from the big clubs at the start. So when you want to move away from that and get ahead of the game at some point, there's two ways where you're going to try and find the form. One is through looking at statistics, whether it's who players underperforming against their XG, for example, or the other is looking through the fixtures. I can't look at for game week 6 who's underperforming their XG at the moment. So all we don't know.
Yeah.
Is look ahead and look at fixture turns and what what shows as good and bad? And again, from that wild card perspective, when might you want to use it quite early on?
Mm. Yeah, definitely. That's obviously a consideration for me when they did the price reveals, and probably just before they did the price reveals. The first and overriding thought in my head was that Man City are going to be beastly this year. I just want three of them. And Liverpool are going to be the next closest, and I'll just get three of them. And I really thought, regardless of fixtures, I'm going to try and get the better teams because they seem to be consistent over a season anyway. And I think that with the likes of City and Liverpool, they're going to start the season really fast this year, more than ever before. They just know, right? Like Liverpool losing the title, ultimately on the last day of the season, they had an opportunity to win it for 30 minutes. Starting early is going to be really important. I think the message in their dressing rooms is going to be like, this is that you can't win the title in the first 3 months, but you can lose it. And so we need to be relentless. And I think both teams are going to hit the ground running, and it doesn't matter for those guys who's in front of them because they could slap anyone. So that I really wanted to focus on the quality of the teams there. And then my fringe players, yeah, sure, I'll tinker with fixtures potentially. The World Cup that you mentioned, obviously 12th of November is when the season pauses.
Yeah, so it's after until game week 16.
Until Boxing Day. And traditionally, it's around game week 17, 18 that we get the second wild card, isn't it, normally?
Yes.
Give or take.
Normally so, halfway. It's normally kind of last weekend of December. I'm not sure how it's going to work this year. We have got a suspicion that there might be unlimited transfers, in which case, why would you wild card in 17 or 18? There might be a couple of cases where you could hang on. Like I think Man City have Fulham and Brentford consecutively at home in their last two before the wild card. So, I mean, if you went into with that period with no Man City, could you wild card in 14, have three, have a couple from a couple of other teams who've got good fixtures, then unlimited again, almost use it like back-to-back free hits, for example. Use it that way if you're quite happy with your team. But yeah, if it's up to sort of game week 18 in terms of using the first one and there's unlimited, then people are going to
be use it.
You would think everyone's going to use it by 7, 8 weeks or something.
Yeah, I would say so as well. And then obviously we've got a clear run to the end of the season. So transfer strategy will then be dictated by that. Should we look at the teams and how they and the kickoff? And we'll whiz through A to W because there's no Zs in the Premier League yet.
Yeah, just a few things. I just want an overview. We're not going to go into the kind of the detail like we went on the teams yesterday, but just a kind of quick run through of an overview of where we think teams are at in terms of their opening fixtures. We are going to cover some kind of captaincy stuff for the big premium players on this pod as well. Arsenal, great start. I've got them as best for the first four, first five, first eight. Really good run of fixtures. Aston Villa, you might remember last year, had a great opening three. Could make a case that they've got the best two or three this year. One of the things I noticed on Villa as well, interesting, is Arsenal's the only away game pre-wildcard that they have versus last year's top seven. So that's the greedy six plus yourselves, Suge, West Ham. So a lot of their tougher games are at home. And I guess that's what side of the fence you sit on with that. Do you look at it as go, they've got a chance in that? Do you look at it as go, their fixture are never that bad? I mean, on my difficulty tracker right up to the wild card, everyone's obviously quite close over a 16-game week period, but I've got Villa best, and it's probably because of that.
Yep.
They don't have seriously hard away games during that period. Bournemouth have an awful start, horrendous. They've got Liverpool and Man City, their first two away games, but a really good run from game week five onwards. It's kind of a similar story for Brentford. They have a super run game week 3 to 11 or 3 to 15, depending on how you want to view that. They go to City in their last game before the World Cup. Their first two are Leicester away and United at home. But if you look at, and we'll talk about this a little bit later on, if you look at kind of rolling tickers and remove weeks at a time, Brentford sit quite high up for quite a while once you start looking at sort of game week 3 and beyond. Yeah.
If you look, and there's certain spots that you don't want to rotate, well, like your goalkeeper, for example.
I think they played Chelsea in game week 12. Other than that, the only games they got against last year's greedy six in the first 12, I think, is Arsenal at home is game week 8 or so, and Manchester United at home game week 2.
Yeah,
that's it. So they've got two home games, which They won one of them last year. Yep. They obviously started with a win against Arsenal. So people like Raya, Tony, if you can look beyond that first two and you're thinking, I want people in, particularly a goalkeeper, you're not going to change your goalkeeper.
No, exactly. Three.
So if you do want to go with a 4.5, I think Raya averaged 3.9 points per game last year,
it's which decent. Is
more than Edward Mendy, actually, interestingly. So you can look at, if you don't want to muck about with that kind of 7 million-ish forward spot, Tony, you go, okay, first two, but then beyond that, very good run.
Yeah, and people always go back to, he's on pens, so he's an anytime kind of guy, Tony.
Brighton, another one, good run from game week 4-8, but their first three aren't overly appealing. United away, Newcastle at home, West Ham away. Not the worst, but not a great opening for
I mean, it doesn't excite me necessarily. I think a lot of people there are looking at some bench players, though, like Dunk at 4.5, you'd think, I can bench him for the first three, but he's a good asset at that price.
Thing is, we'll probably talk about this more tomorrow, but Lewis Dunk is kind of a point in case. Like, if Perisic gets injured in pre-season, you've got Ryan Sessegnon sitting there at the same price, then he becomes someone who's going to be in everyone's team, for example, I think.
Yeah, someone like Dunk is a classic example of someone that people will start the season with thinking he's cheap. The first three fixtures are difficult. You don't get any points off him. People might move off him and he'll come down to 4.4 after the first 3 or 4 weeks. There's always that player that too many people start with and you can pick up a couple of pips cheaper after 3 or 4 weeks.
We'll talk more pricing and structure tomorrow. Chelsea have a good first seven, but it's something really interesting in Chelsea's fixtures, and it's kind of highlighted by these first seven. So in those first seven fixtures, Chelsea have 3 home games, 4 away games. The 3 home games are Tottenham, Leicester and West Ham, which are all, I'd say, sticky. I think it would be fair to say. It did pick 7 points in those 3 games last year, but they are all games where if you don't turn up for, you could get beat. Tottenham, Leicester, West Ham at home. The 4 away games, Everton, Leeds, Southampton, Fulham, you'd think if Chelsea show up to their best, then that's 12 points on the road to start. So if they perform well in them home games as well, they could start really well. The interesting thing on Chelsea, though, and this might come back around when we look at captaincy for premium assets, and look, Raheem Sterling might be one who's wearing a Chelsea shirt when the season kicks off. Prior to the wild card, on my fixture ticket, I've only got one green home fixture for them prior to the World Cup, and that's Wolves in game week 10. And when that comes round, depending on what Wolves might do over the next month or so, it might not be that.
Yep.
It might be more like a yellow, for example, I don't know, or a grey, depending on how you do your FDRs. Palace have a horrendous start. It's absolutely awful, all the way up to roundabouts game week 11. Then they've got a brilliant run right through to 2023. Yeah. Everton is quite grim as well. They've got an okay run 3-5, but two of them are away from home. It's tough all the way to game week 13. If they start slow, it's going to be very difficult.
Everton's one I am worried about.
Fulham, another one. And this is kind of a theme where those who we expect to be near the bottom don't have good starts. Fulham looks quite grim up to about game week 11. They have the odd nice one fixture in there, but there's never a run of anything good. Leeds are probably the outlier. They've got a good, decent first seven, actually. Leicester start with 2 decent home games. Brentford game week 1, Southampton game week 3. They've got a really good game week 9-13. I had a look at rolling 5 game weeks up to kind of game week 10. So I run game week 10-14. The best 5-week run I've got of the lot is Leicester game week 9-13 for any team at any point in the opening sort of 10-week runs. Liverpool, great start. It's almost feels impossible to think you won't start with 3 Liverpool players.
Yeah.
Even if they went through pre-season, they had 3-4 injuries. I think he's still starting with 3 Liverpool players. And you know, even if Alisson and Van Dijk this time got injured, maybe all right, it's Trent, Diaz, Salah, whatever. We'll talk about Liverpool more, but they've got an amazing start. City's is probably not as beautiful looking at the start because of the West Ham fixture, but you'd argue their first 10 are great. United, I don't think, have a good consistent run of form till game week 14. They're the one from the big six which don't have a brilliant start. I wouldn't say it's awful, but you look at things like Brighton at home is potentially sticky one. Brentford away 2 is potentially sticky. It's Liverpool 3. It never stands out as good for United at any point. Newcastle have got City and Liverpool in the first 5. They have a really good run from game week 6 onwards. As do Nottingham Forest, another one with a difficult start. but a good run from game week 6 to 10. I've actually, for the September period, I've actually got them best of the lot, actually, Nottingham Forest. Southampton, another one we think might struggle, have a difficult start, but a decent run from 6 to 9. Tottenham have a good opening 6, then go to Manchester City in game week 7. The game week 15 fixture at home to Liverpool is Tottenham's first home game versus last year's top 7. So the more difficult fixtures Tottenham have towards the start are away from home. Really interesting one on Tottenham's versus last year opening period. How many game weeks do you think you have to go in the season before you find Tottenham won the corresponding fixture last season?
10.
Well, no, I told you we've got Man City in game week 7, mate.
Oh, okay.
And it is Man City in game week 7. So
the
we
start six last year, we start didn't get nothing else.
Southampton at home, lost. Chelsea away, lost. Wolves at home, lost. Then we got Forest away, can't. West Ham away, lost. And then Fulham, obviously not applicable. So Man City game week 7 is Tottenham's first fixture. They actually won the corresponding fixture of last season.
That's crazy.
And yet, we look at that first 6 for Tottenham and go, that's really good. And it probably is because circumstances have changed. Yours is the complete flip, interestingly, where your first 6 are tough. Then you come into a good run. But it's the sort of one, I think you can start picturing it in your mind, things like, you look at them at similar price and go, Kulusevski first 6, Bowen then from 7. These are the sort of trends people might want to start marking up in their mind. Wolves, I think, will struggle. They've also got a good opening 6. As I mentioned on yesterday's podcast, Neto looks like he's in the majority of drafts at the moment, at sort of 5.5-ish. Just to point on what I said in that pod yesterday, João Moutinho did re-sign for Wolves yesterday.
He did. I did like their re-signing tweets. He wins the bottle of wine. That was quite creative.
I don't know what took them so long, but anyway, they've got it.
It happened. It happened in the end. That was a very quick rundown there. I'm hoping people had pen and paper ready to just jot down the notes, but you can always rewind it.
I don't think you need to, because
it's fairly obvious there.
To be honest, yes, because you look at it in terms of the start and you go, as said, of the top 6, the one that I think don't have a great start is Manchester United, but there are decent fixture. I mean, after I said those first 3, they go to Southampton 4. It's never a bad run, like Leicester, Arsenal, Palace, Leeds is what follows. But it never looks brilliant to make me think, oh, I want Manchester United assets. There's a run of green fixtures there for me. That doesn't really show until just before the World Cup, basically. But for the other 5, there's a real case to go in.
Yeah, and this is the season that you could make a squad of 15 from those 5 if you wanted to. I do believe you could just about get there.
You wouldn't need the 15 because you'd go with a shit goalkeeper. A Raya or a 4.0.
Close enough.
Certainly in terms of your outfield 11.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then you're rotating with players from good teams.
It absolutely is possible. And no, you don't need to be sacrificing Mo Salah to do anything like that particularly. The ones that I think have stood out to people who have good starts, Wolves, as mentioned, Leeds, we don't quite know what's happening with the squad yet. Plus, is not, obviously, if Rafinha goes, it's like what asset kind of stands out to me. But Leeds might be the one where we can find something. If you look at their first 7, Wolves at home, Southampton away, then there's Chelsea at home, but is at home, and we don't quite know what we're going to get from Chelsea yet. And that's obviously before the transfer window shuts. Brighton away, Everton at home, Brentford away, Forest at home. So actually, as a group of 7, I think, you know, Chelsea at home is the one that stands out as difficult there. Brighton away is not easy. But that's a good run of the 7. Mm. But you wouldn't know where to look at them.
Yeah, I think something like Wolves, for example, my gut instinct when I think about Wolves, and I know they're losing certain players or they haven't replenished and they might be light on numbers, but where were Wolves amazing last year? Defensive. They were really good at the back. Have they lost any of their defenders? No, they still got Jose Sarr in goal and they've still got a decent back line.
Saïss has obviously gone.
Right.
But that was an inevitability.
And Willy Bolly hadn't played all season until he came back from injury, and so he can
step
in. I think
that's gone for Willy Bolly.
You think he's done? He's never going to come back to
his form. Is he going to be Wolves' first choice? In my opinion, no. I think that ship sailed, unfortunately.
Really? I thought Willy Bolly, Saïss, and Cody and Kilman would make up the back 3.
They need to buy. And this is why Part talked about, could they go to a four and just play Cody and Kilman? They're weak in that area now.
Yeah, potentially. But then I look at Johnny, who's been a good FPL asset at 4.5. Like Wolves, basically, my overriding thing is Wolves defensive. So when I look at Wolves fixtures and do they have a good start, I look at, can they keep clean sheets in those fixtures? Not, are they going to win those games necessarily? Because I'm a defensive asset from them, not an attacking asset.
So what's to say, I mean, listen, we'll get information from pre-season, obviously, in terms of if they change system and who's likely to start. You've got Aitnori, you've got Semedo, you've got Johnny. Do you feel safe there?
I always feel safe with Johnny.
Back that one away.
You had to ask the question, didn't you, James? You had to ask the question.
You've been caught at second man, I think. There,
he is historical bias for me with him. He's done well for me in the past.
He did well for you.
Nah, he's done well for me the season before he got injured. He was always a good asset, and when he came back from injury, he performed. He got points. So I think he is he's better than Aitnori anyway, in my opinion.
If Tomiyasu's fit, would you pick Johnny over Tomiyasu?
I think you're more likely to get attacking returns out of Johnny than you are Tomiyasu.
Yeah. Arsenal probably got the best fixture of a lot, though, in terms of better than Wolves. And as I said, say something happens to Perisic and Reguilon sold, you got Sessegnon at the same price.
The reality is, I think I'm going to try and build a squad with the top five, yes, Man United. So regardless, yeah, I'm happy to ignore them all. I suppose I'm trying to make a case here for these other 15 clubs in the league, which is difficult to do at the moment.
It is, because of the way the price, and we'll speak about that certainly more tomorrow as well. Players like Neto and kind of the attacking cheaper players is probably going to, the way it's always gone, interestingly, we've always looked at rotation. Like my thinking was, when I knew we was going to do this pod, my thing was, I'm going to look at rotation, we'll find little things that kind of stand out, all they're good rotators. It doesn't feel like you're going to want it. No. It's almost a case of if you have 2 5.5, like a Neto and an Undav, for example, or the Wolves and Brighton, do they rotate? We can say, okay, right, so Neto goes to Tottenham in game week 3. Oh, if Undav's in the team, or they've got West Ham away, that's not great either. It almost feels more like that. Maybe the game's completely shifting in terms of looking at rotational attacking players.
Yeah. And the other thing that we always need to consider, and fixtures are definitely key in that decision-making process, is captaincy, of course. Like, you want to make sure that for every week you have the best captain, and that decision is almost always done on the fixture that the player has. So that's one area where I will look at it. If you've got a City or a Liverpool player, inevitably, is it a case that we're just jumping between the two, or are there other options as well?
So in terms of premiums, it's just focus on the attacking ones. You can, of course, captain people like Trent and Cancelo. Of course you can. And Reece James will be certain times for it as well. Although, as mentioned, those Chelsea fixtures don't ever kind of make them look like the best captaincy option, ironically, even if, say, Raheem Sterling does go there. But we'll focus on from the attacking perspective. We've obviously got Salah at Liverpool. We've got Haaland and KDB at Man City. But just quickly, thoughts on De Bruyne being more expensive than Haaland? I can't really make sense of that, personally.
Thoughts on... Well, Sonny should be more expensive than Kane, should he?
Well, he is.
Yeah, but do you think that is a justifiable increase?
I think based on last season and the explosiveness of Sonny and being as a midfielder, yeah, it's okay.
The Son-Kane price difference is the same as the KDB-Haaland price difference. I don't know. KDB seems to... maybe it's a Sky mentality, but he'll pick up all different types of points. The one clean sheet point, he'll get an assist and a goal, and it's all round. Haaland, I don't think will have the all round point scoring. It will be goals, and that's about it. Kane, on the other hand, has an all round game where he picks up assists. So I think it's justifiable. I think KDB will outscore Haaland this year, if assuming
really?
All things fit. All things the same, and you stay fit for 38 games of the season.
I feel like if people didn't get 90 points for KDB against Wolves, then he would not be more expensive than Haaland.
90?
That's how I feel.
Oh, are you, triple captaincy. Yeah. I just think that you always got to think that extra point for a clean sheet as a midfielder, extra point for a goal, and the assist capability. So will Haaland have more attacking returns? Quite possibly. But will they equate to more FPL points? Possibly not. Like, I'm very seriously looking at, I'd rather have KDB than Salah.
Really?
And I'll tell you why. Because I'd rather
I'm
have...
I'm looking forward to hearing
I'd
this.
Rather have Luis Diaz than Foden, for example. So if I've got the premium City and the second tier Liverpool, I'm happier than the premium Liverpool and the second tier City in terms of combination. And I'll have Haaland. And I'll have Trent. And I'll have Robbo.
It doesn't have to. I mean, all right, let's throw that into the conversation then now that you mentioned it. So you've mentioned Foden. I'd arguably say we could bring Jack Grealish into this conversation this year, possibly. 7 million I've got my eyes on, I have to say. You've obviously got Sonny is 12, Harry Kane's 11.5. But I think in terms of, if we just focus on the midfielders for a minute, you've got Salah, KDB, Son, that's the premiums. And then you're going into the mid-price range and you're saying you've got Diaz, Foden, and you can put Kulusevski in that bracket, right?
It's fair. They're
so
the same, yeah.
You don't have to do it between Liverpool and City. You can do it between Liverpool and Tottenham. So the same argument would be, would you rather have spend an extra million on Salah and Kulusevski, or would you rather have Son and Diaz and save a million, for example? That's part of the debate, isn't it?
Yep.
I mean, you can, by the way, obviously have Salah and Diaz, and I think that's what a lot of people are going to end up doing, actually, because I think Diaz is the one really surprising one, isn't it? Mm. 8 million is the one it felt like. Foden's where I thought he would be. Kulusevski, I think, was going to be top end 8.5. Diaz, I was 8.5 minimum, I think, in my mind. Some surprises coming at 8.
So coming back to this captaincy question, and we've just talked about the premiums from the two big boys, Liverpool, City, and then Spurs. And I think from a captaincy point of view, Spurs are very much in the conversation because of the way you finish the season with the amount of goals you score.
And the two players.
They're just explosive, double-digit returns comfortably.
Son and Kane. I think if Son and Kane, and just to, I'm not saying Tottenham are going to finish above Chelsea, for example, but if Son and Kane and Kai Havertz all have the same fixture, Kai Havertz is probably your third choice.
It does feel like you guys will either lose 1-0 or win 4-0. You know, it's either you batter a team or you like have a stupid defeat. And when you're talking from an FPL point of view, you want the 4-0s because you want to fill your boots with points. Your kind of breakdown of captaincy means that you don't need to go away from Liverpool, City or Spurs until the World Cup?
I don't think so, no. But you might need to jump between because you're probably not going to have the free premiums. I guess ways round it would be if you went for a combination of, and this is something to raise as probably as a wider scale, would you go Son, Haaland and Diaz, for example? Are you comfortable captaining a Diaz to say, okay, I'll do it that way, they're my free captaincy covers. I've obviously mentioned earlier, you can look at people like Trent and Cancelo as well. It's one of the things. The only, I think for me to go without Mo at the moment, I probably need to be in a position where I'm really comfortable to say, I'm comfortable captaining Trent or Diaz. That's probably where I'd need to be. Because when I look at it, I've looked at captaincy across the first 16 game weeks, and you don't have to look at it for that long, but I just wanted to look at it as a sustained period. Like, I would have Mo currently first or second best option in 14 of those 16 game weeks. So just counting.
I'm just thinking...
And I've got him best in half of them.
It was a silence of, okay, he's first or second in 14, but then let's say Haaland is the outstanding City choice. He's first or second in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 of them. And Sonny is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them. Between Sonny and Haaland, they cover you off.
We are, Such is obviously referring to saying that he's based on my opinion.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, this is the difficult thing. So I think 12 million Sonny, I think we have to shift our opinion of him from being astonishingly good value at 10 million last year, and I spoke about this a lot last summer, to we have to now compare him to Salah.
Yep.
A lot of people would have kind of had both last year, and you can obviously have both now this year as well, but we have to put him in that bracket. We now have to go, right, he's elite. And when I look at the captaincy in terms of, I think, best choice over those 16 game weeks, I've got Sonny or Kane, as in Tottenham, down as best for three of them. And even the three that I have them down as best, Wolves at home, Fulham at home and Everton at home, respectively, in game weeks 3, 6 and 11, there are alternatives, and I've got Salah second best for those 3 weeks. So, I mean, we all think of that. One of those is Liverpool got Manchester United away game week 3. I know what happened when I went against Mo Salah last year for that fixture.
One of the things that you said a lot last season, I say last season, you said previously is, like a good example is when you moved away from Mo Salah to Bruno Fernandes. You didn't keep Salah for a period where you couldn't justify not captaining him. Now, if you weren't going to captain him, it wasn't worth it. Because of the value that was tied up to him.
No, but it's also worth remembering that's the end of the season and you're trying to punch in different ways.
Yeah, okay. But so in could you make or would you make that same argument for Son for the first 16 weeks of this season where do I want 12 million in a player that I'm only going to captain 3 times in 16 game weeks potentially? Would you make that argument or not?
Yeah, so last year I'd looked at it and United obviously it was a real swing around game week 15. And I looked over sort of if I didn't wildcard early, it seems ridiculous to think back to it, but that Chelsea swing in sort of game week 7 or 8 with Lukaku and looking at it and going, I probably captained Bruno once, which was on paper was going to be game week 4 when they had Newcastle. And of course, Ronaldo had come in for that game. I should have gone and bought him instead. It doesn't feel quite like that with Sonny because if you condense it more, if you look at the first 6 weeks, for example, I've got Salah best twice, Haaland down best twice, and Son down, if we just remove Kane for the moment. Son down as best twice. So over that shorter period, you can make a case Salah twice, Haaland twice, Son/Kane twice. So looking at, we don't need to look at captaincy for 16 weeks. I've just happened to do that. When we condense it, it's not quite so obvious. But again, the 4 weeks where I've got Salah as not the best choice, he's the second best choice, and it's debatable. So would you, just to throw it out there, game week 2, Haaland's got Bournemouth at home, Salah's got Palace at home. Where are you going?
Haaland.
Well, that's what I've got at the moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that might be dependent in terms of, as I mentioned yesterday, the shape that Bournemouth come up with. Palace are not a side I ever feel like get battered.
No, they're not.
But then Liverpool can win 2-0 and Salah can score twice, right? Mm. Is the point. Tottenham that week go to Chelsea, so that's a no for Son. Game week 3, Salah goes to United. Tottenham have got Wolves at home. City got Newcastle away.
Go Haaland.
Away to Newcastle.
Yeah.
It's the best of that.
Over United at home for Liverpool. Well, I mean, I think we all remember what Liverpool did to United last season. Twice, I might add.
Logically, is that
going to happen again? Yeah. Not under Ten Hag, I don't think so.
You wouldn't think so.
There's a lot of pride at stake there for Manchester United in that fixture. So I think I'd still go Haaland away at Man City. Newcastle, sorry. But I think...
rather than Kane or Son, if Wolves have regressed...
Yeah.
We don't know that yet.
I need to see... That's one I need to see and taste what happens in the first few weeks of the season.
But that's my point. So I think like that one, game week 3 is a real... debate. That one, game week 2, where you've got Haaland at home to Bournemouth and Salah at home to Palace, I mean, it's almost tearing your hair out because you want to go with both. Game week 3, you could leave them and not be fussed. That's the one where if you're looking at it and early on you're thinking, I want to have a week early on where I want to attack against the premiums and go with someone different, for example. And unfortunately, for sort of Arsenal, Chelsea, their fixtures aren't incredible that week to make you think, oh, I want to do them instead, for example. That's a non-fussy, isn't it? I've got Tottenham at home to Wolves as the best for that week, but that's just opinion, isn't it?
Yeah, that's we need a lot more information on that before we.
And that's what I'm saying. So you start looking at it and going right. So actually, no, I don't need necessarily Son or Kane. Game week 4, Salah's got Bournemouth at home. You couldn't look past that at the moment. 5, Salah's got Newcastle at home. Haaland's got Forest at home. At the moment, you'd attack the promoted team, wouldn't you? I think. With respect to Forest. 6, I've got Tottenham again at home to Fulham as best. City go to Villa. Liverpool go to Everton. So again, is a Tottenham best there? And the interesting thing
I think Liverpool at Everton suddenly but we need to see what Everton
again,
do.
Again, that's what I'm saying. So my point, before the prices were put into place, I think Son has come in a little bit more expensive than I thought. I would probably be 11.5-ish. I think Haaland's come in a bit cheaper. I thought Haaland would be more expensive than Son. I thought he'd be sort of 12-ish or 12.5. Salah's come in where I expected. So removing that and just focusing on the players to start with, I'd say, right, if you were to remove those three players and say, right, you can only have two of them, what's the one you feel like you can't do without at the start? And unfortunately, the boring answer is it feels like it's Salah. Mm-hmm. Because Salah is always a good alternative. The first week where it doesn't feel like I wouldn't put Liverpool in the top in terms of captaincy is game week 8. I want to say they go to Chelsea. It's also a fixture Salah scored in last season, by the way. The best that week, City at Wolves. I've got Man United at home to Leeds down as second. And I've got Tottenham at home to Leicester as third. You might make a case to put Tottenham at the top of that one, for example, rather than in third place. That's the first one where, in theory, I think of the three, Liverpool, City, Tottenham, premium assets, if you were just to go with one, you're probably going with Mo. And you'd blindly go with him for the first 7 weeks or so.
Yep.
And that's the problem. The only week to really attack against those premiums is what I said is game week 3. And the fixtures for the other in that game week are not spectacular. Arsenal are at Bournemouth, but do we, I guess it depends what, say, Gabriel Jesus' price is or something. If he was to come in at 8 or 8.5, maybe you'd start with him and look at it, but away, probably defensive. If it's Friday night, they're fucked, they get beat, aren't they? If it's a Saturday lunchtime, maybe you go with it. Chelsea are at Leeds, so maybe a Reece James, for example. But their away fixtures are not spectacular. Obviously, Manchester United play Liverpool themselves. You have Brighton at home. So if you were thinking of a Burien,
yeah, that's never a great game for us, Brighton at home. I hate it.
Brighton at home is not a great game for captaincy anyway. We're just playing Brighton from a captaincy perspective, not a team that you'd arguably target. Leicester at home to Southampton. Maybe. But then are you breaking your team to start with Vardy? Would you really go Madison? Madison at home to Southampton, then Salah at Man United, Son at home to Wolves. You're pushing it, aren't you?
Madison is the same price as Kulu, same price as Luis Diaz, same price as Bukayo Saka. Do I need
but
to go on?
He finished the season great, Madison.
Yeah, but I'd rather go with the consistency of those better teams.
But his consistency was great at the end of the season.
Yeah.
You can make a case, if you need to save the money, Harvey Barnes is a million cheaper.
Yeah, I don't think James Madison's a bad player and had a bad end to the season, but I just wouldn't buy him an FPL for that price when I can get Kulu. Kulu would be my first choice and Saka probably second. Well, Luis Diaz. But that Luis Diaz is going to be dictated by which other Liverpool players I want, I think, more than anything else.
I think as much as some of the pricing, and listen, they've attempted something to try and shake the game up a bit this year, so I don't mind it, but I think, do you know what my actual instinct is? We'll probably talk about more tomorrow. My instinct is that us playing Sky is going to be very beneficial to what happens in FPL this year, because I think it really is going to end up like a template, particularly at the start. Then it might start to move away. I forgot my point, so just jump in.
Well, we were talking about the pricing and what they've done, but in terms of captaincy, the other thing that we don't know about is the impact of Champions League.
Ah, now, that's what I was going to say. Thank you.
All of the teams in Europe and particularly the Champions League seem to be adding a lot of depth. And the reason they're adding a lot of depth is so that they can rotate and manage both competitions, which could have even more of an impact on some of the league games.
So someone like Madison probably starts every week now, doesn't he? Remember all that rotational worry we had when Leicester had all them doubles? It's like, will they play twice? Will they play twice? Well, that's not going to be the case now. And this is where, to flip it on its head, whereas yesterday I'd said it doesn't feel right at the moment, maybe having a consistent team on the pitch every week might help. And obviously, as you'd mentioned, keeping people like Fofana fit will obviously be a big boost as well, if they can do so. There's a few things just from a schedule perspective to be aware of that are slightly different. There's a wider conversation first before we do that. Obviously, something else is just generally different in the league. 5 subs.
Yes.
Is an impact as well. So let's take the case you mentioned, Richarlison, as an example. There is a rumour, by the way, that he might be in for a suspension, you know, from the old flare throwing. We think 1-game ban might be incoming, which might appeal to some a little bit more for the likes of Son and Kulusevski with that attractive Southampton fixture that we lost last year in game week 1. But if Richarlison's a sub, there's no way he ain't getting on the pitch, is there?
Yeah, I think he'll get on.
It's like a certainty, isn't it? And the same applies to if Jota's on the bench at Liverpool, for example.
Yeah, inevitably comes on, yeah.
So does that impact you or concern you any more this year?
A little.
Because, I mean, if you take City, for the example, I mean, there were games last year. Don't matter how many subs Guardiola's got, he don't use them sometimes.
Yeah, I think it does a little. But I think what we've learned over the years is that a player can do as much damage in 10 minutes as they can in 60. They're coming on for the last 10, then they can still score points. And if they only play 60, they can still score points. So I'm going to try and ignore it a little bit. Obviously want players that will start more often than not. But the type of players that are coming off the bench... or the ones that are going to be prone to coming off the bench, I want to be the attacking players more than the defensive players. Because you're not going to pick up a clean sheet in 10 minutes, but you can pick up a goal or assist. So the rotation prone players are going to be attacking players for me, for sure.
And attacking fullbacks, potentially?
Mm.
Look at the likes of Perisic, for example. I think I want to say Adam and Baker from above average FPL. I think it might have been Adam. Done some analysis on Inter's when in Conte's season at Inter, where he won the title, they had five subs in place there and did analysis in terms of when the wing backs come off. If I find that, I'll retweet it, but I'm sure you can find that on their timeline. But generally, he was always changing them. Mm. Like, so the wing backs weren't playing 90 minutes. Sometimes they'd play 55 minutes. More often than not, he was playing more than 60, which can lock in the clean sheet, obviously, quicker. But I think to refer it back to what we're talking about in terms of the premium assets, does that make you more nervous that a Mo Salah might come off after 55, for example?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think these teams have better quality to bring on. Like you mentioned, I don't even know what week you were talking about in yesterday's pod. Is it conceivable that you turn up with a front three of Son, Richarlison and Kulusevski and Kane's bench?
Game week six.
That's still fine. So the quality coming off the bench is good enough that I don't think the managers will worry as much.
The reason I reference game week six as well is Champions League is obviously straight after that. It's the first midweek. So I think, yes, rotation is going to be more of a concern this year. I think one of the kind of on-trend buzzwords that you'll hear more of this year is X-Mins. Expected minutes is gonna become a thing, and I know there are sites out there that are already tracking that and predicting it. The expected minutes is gonna come down this year, isn't it?
Yeah.
With more subs, you would think.
Yeah.
But I don't think for the likes of Salah or Son, I don't think this is a huge issue, particularly to start with. So there's nothing in the midweek after game week one. We've got a full week to game week two. I think it's League Cup first round in the midweek. In the middle, which none of the Premier League clubs participate in. Between two and three, there's only one team in the Premier League that plays a midweek fixture. That is who, Suge?
West Ham United.
It is, because you've got to play your Thursday night club playoff game. And your second leg of that is between game weeks three and four, where the other non-European teams will compete in the Carabao Cup second round. They will all change their teams. Agree?
Yep.
Now, game week five is a set of midweek fixtures in between four and six. And then you've got Champions League the midweek afterwards. Now, the Champions League draw won't be till, obviously, the season started. The qualifying rounds of the Champions League will be going on in those midweeks between two and four, for example. So it's not until after that you'll know the draw. Now, that can have an impact in terms of where certain games are played. So I'll give you an example. Let's say West Ham play Tottenham in game week five. That's set of midweek fixtures. Now, the game's not going to be a Tuesday because you'll be playing in Thursday the Europe before. So it's Thursday, Sunday for you. Then presumably it's probably the Wednesday. The reason it's probably the Wednesday is because Tottenham might have to play on the Saturday beforehand.
Because you might play Tuesday.
In game week six, they might have to play on a Tuesday in the Champions League. Makes sense? This is where our sky thinking comes into things in terms of our planning. But it could mean if you take the weekend before, Tottenham go to Nottingham Forest. Now, if Sky decide... Nottingham Forest, Tottenham, Friday night, we can see that as one of the kind of Arsenal potential upset games. Then Tottenham might end up with a period where they play Friday, Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday. And the spacing is quite nice. And there isn't a way to know this at the start of the season. Or it could be that Sky go, we want that on the Sunday. And Tottenham end up playing Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday. And even at that point, Kane's liable for a rest, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think now that Richarlison's on board, as long as the four forward players are fit, I think the odd rest will come. And that has to be factored into your thinking. So don't think, again, we can look at those fixtures and say, Tottenham home to Fulham, game week six. Yeah, that's probably the best. But is the guy you're backing how can you even say right now that he's going to play? And that does apply to Salah, and it will apply to Haaland. And that's where I think the secondary options like Diaz, Cancelo, Trent from these teams might be useful as well. One strategy this year might be to say, right, I need to have two players from each the three teams. Then would you feel comfortable captain Kulusevski? Because I don't, you're not going to go Kane and Son, are you? I don't think.
No.
I can't see.
No, then the alternative is Perisic. You're happy to captain Perisic.
Wow. That would be on the moment, X minutes problem, isn't it? Because as much as I'd said to you yesterday on our Patreon pod, I think he could end up being the highest owned player when the game kicks off if he's fit because of his price at 5.5. I don't know about captaincy. Going back to what said about Conte taking his wing-backs off and stuff as well. But yeah, maybe that's a strategy this year to make sure you've got... But most will. Most are going to start with Trent. Most are going to start with Cancelo. Most are going to have three Liverpool. Two Tottenham, not everyone, but perhaps that's a strategy to consider. I guess Perisic will be in a lot of teams, so maybe if you include him into that.
Yep.
We can think of these players as captaincy options now, for sure.
And then in terms of fixture swings, is there anything particularly we need to cover off? Are there good fixture swings to consider, or are we back to, you know what, they're irrelevant because we're going to be swimming in a sea of top five players rather than having to look around at swapping from Villa to Southampton?
Just before we do that, we will. One difference with the Champions League this year, and this will obviously apply to Arsenal, Man United, West Ham as well, but they'll rotate more in terms of weaker teams in Europe in the group stage, I think. It's 1 week between. So you will get that, say, Tottenham playing Wednesday in the Champions League. It'll be Saturday Premier League, next Tuesday Champions League. So the midweeks of the Champions League this year are after 6, after 7, then after 8 is international break, after 9 is Champions League, after 10 is Champions League. After 11, it's midweek Premier League, then weekend Premier League. Then it's midweek Champions League, Premier League, midweek Champions League.
It's consistently midweek, weekend, midweek, weekend for...
All the way through.
8-9 weeks there.
There is no way, even in that case, if we use, say, the Harry Kane example and presume that he's probably going to play twice for England in those internationals in the middle as well, there is no way somewhere in there he's not getting a break, even if it means... We're pissing a game 4-0 and we take him off at half-time or something.
Yeah.
In which case, he's probably got the returns. But you know what I'm saying? Something in there, even for him, there's got to be some give with that, how condensed it is. There has to be. I know a few people have raised concerns about, and it's quite way ahead. Obviously, the World Cup breaks the season after game week 16. Just a couple of points on that. The final midweek before the Premier League ends is Carabao Cup third round. So I think anybody who goes to the World Cup not playing that midweek before, yep. you would that would be crazy, wouldn't it? Even in what have Tottenham got that not going? So Kulusevski would maybe play in the Carabao Cup. I can't believe Richarlison's son or Kane would.
Yep.
It wouldn't make sense. Unless obviously they've been rotated in other games and have had their breaks elsewhere. And straight after the World Cup final, obviously the Premier League resumes on Boxing Day, the 26th of December, which is a week after the World Cup final. Did you know the Carabao Cup fourth round is in the midweek, which will start 2 days after the World Cup final?
Mad. Anyone who makes it to the semis, let alone the final, is not going to play in that.
Well, I would think anybody who makes the World Cup final would probably be doubtful for
the 26th of December.
Later, Boxing Day fixture. Just, you want to celebrate, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Completely understandable. Right. Yeah, what do you want to come on to next?
So swings, maybe. Yeah, I think that's the one thing we can think about. I don't think it's highly relevant, if I'm honest with you. Like I mentioned, we're going to be swimming in a pool of top five players, top five clubs, I should clarify. So previously, where we've had to find a shift from a Villa to a Palace or a West Ham to a Wolves or whatever else, I don't think we're going to be wanting to do that as much, unless you are a maverick out there that wants to really play the game quite differently this year.
Thing is, if I look at, because I've looked at these rolling five game weeks, and yeah, listen, we are going to have a template to start with. Arsenal, City, Liverpool, for me, are the three teams with the best first five fixtures. It's not inconceivable to pop nine in. You might, from a pricing perspective, struggle to maybe go three Arsenal, but we don't know Gabriel Jesus's price at the moment, for example. I think if he's 8.5 forward or so, it's pretty tempting. It might be difficult to fit in, but it'd be pretty tempting to know that, you know, like I said, game week 3 and they've got Fulham at home in 4, there might be some alternatives where he could be a differential captain for you. Arsenal, City, Liverpool got the best 3. Tottenham have got some very good fixtures in that opening 5, as did Chelsea. United's a little bit middling. But the point is, bar sort of Wolves, Leeds and Villa for the first 4, it is the big clubs have got the best start. There aren't things like there were last year where it was everyone started with a Villa player last year. I don't think that's necessarily, you can do this year, but I don't think it's the case to think, I definitely want to go with a Villa player. I think I started with 3 last year, I want to say, potentially on opening day. What's interesting is last year we had this kind of captaincy swing thing and the Chelsea fixtures, you might remember.
Yep.
Chelsea had that incredible 5-game run.
We all went to bloody Havertz, mate.
We didn't all go to Kai Havertz. There's plenty of listeners who just stuck with Mo Salah. I will still never regret captaining the centre forward at home to Norwich and they won 7-0. I will never ever regret it. I don't care.
Every single player bar him returned, even the subs. Listen, that was the day.
You can hate the outcome, but I would make the same decision again every time. I was not anticipating Liverpool winning 5-0 the next day either. In fact, I believe I'd said on the Friday podcast, there is no way Mo Salah will get a hat-trick this weekend. Sure enough, that's what happened, of course. But there were obvious switches like that last year, the Manchester United game week 15 one, where I said, you're not going to have too much interest in them beforehand. You know at that point right there, you want 3. And those who weren't wildcarding in that period like me last year were kind of building the Chelsea players in basically straight after they went to Liverpool, I want to say, in game week 3 last year. Slowly, it was such a focus towards, I've got to get to that period with 3 Chelsea players, basically. There isn't anything like that this year, where it becomes obvious. And interestingly, once we kind of hit that period of sort of game week 7 or so, what's really interesting then, you'll find the best clubs down towards the bottom of the fixture ticker. So I'll give you an example. I mentioned City, Arsenal, Liverpool as the top 3 in the first 5 fixtures for me on my fixture ticker. For game weeks 8 to 12, I've got them as the bottom 3. So you could look at it in theory and say, right, I'll go with 9 of them. Let's just say you did want to treble up on the 3 teams. And you go, well, I'll wildcard then. Wildcard to what? Just get rid of all your City Liverpool players. The interesting thing of that period is Newcastle, Leicester, Villa and West Ham in and around that period from sort of game week 6 onwards, let's say the top 6 pretenders, if you will, the 4 clubs have probably got the most hope of trying to push through that ceiling this year. They have great runs. So what do we do? Because at that point, there's going to be talisman players over that period, likes of possibly Jared Bowen, who I've seen a lot of people saying, oh, he's madly overpriced. I just think he's probably not of interest because you've got a horrible start. But was he a full fire scoring player in the game last year?
200 points.
Yeah. People like Madison, Vardy, Barnes, someone will show. Newcastle, be it Callum Wilson, Bruno Guimaraes again, perhaps someone else they might buy, for example. Perhaps at Villa it'll be Watkins or Coutinho, Matty Cash, something like that. Villa, as I said, have a really good sort of opening 3-4, then a couple of horrible fixtures, then it comes back around where another good run starts from them. Villa start right at the top of the fixture ticker for me, go right to the bottom and then come right back up to the top again. So when you're looking at that period, it's actually the assets, the template that we want at the start that gets difficult. But aren't players like Trent and Cancelo, what are we going to do? Sell them?
Fixture proof.
But they kind of are, aren't they?
Mm.
What do we do about it? Do we dip off one? That's probably it, isn't it? We dip off one maybe for a little bit and shove it about and go, okay, well, I'm going to, Liverpool got a tough run. I might leave Diaz for a Bowen or a Madison or something like that over that period. But the point is, there isn't anything overly obvious that I can see that make me say, oh yeah, that team suddenly from nowhere has got unbelievable fixtures, we'd want 3 of them. It doesn't come about.
So the concern with the start of the season usually is we always take a punt on one or two players that we think are going to start well that start bad and we need to move off. We don't need to take as many risks this year because we can afford tried and trusted players from teams that are reliable. And by the time we get to that game week 6, if you're talking about Newcastle, Leicester, West Ham, we'll have information, right? We'll know how the teams are in terms of form, which players are in form.
And transfer window will be shut.
And exactly that. So there's no risk of buying somebody who then gets displaced. And so why worry about it? Like, I'd be comfortable if I knew there were some really good assets there, like pulling a wild card in game week 6, 7, 8 to move to them, or transitioning over like 3 or 4 weeks and then wild carding back to the big five.
The other thing, obviously not to overthink it, is what if there isn't unlimited transfers? And we're not saying there is, by the way. We've just suggested it's something that they might do to appease, which they've done with the pricing. The target audience aren't me, Suj, or you, the listener, or you, the viewer. It's the engagement of everyone globally to make sure that they submit their team on a Friday or a Saturday morning or whatever. But if there isn't unlimited transfers, for example, do we not all need to wildcard during the World Cup?
Yep.
It's a possibility, isn't it? And yep. I think this adds weight to that. Is to say there isn't anything like that Chelsea swing this year or that Manchester United swing.
So you can hold your nerve, basically, if you want to.
A little bit. I think it's really... One of the really unfortunate things, I think, in terms of the way they've priced up the game is, I think it's really unfortunate that the top teams of the players that we all want interest in also have really good fixtures. Like, I think United were probably the one that was probably in people's minds going to be the least interesting this year. And of the big six, they've got the worst set. It's not horrendous, but they've got the worst set. Whereas if United had had an incredible start to the season, you'd think, like they did last year in fairness, say they'd had the similar opening, Leeds, Southampton, Wolves, to what they had last year, you'd maybe look again at Bruno Fernandes or Marcus Rashford's price. It's a joke, isn't it?
It's a ridiculous price.
It's a joke. But are we going to start with him?
No.
Not unless he shows us something in pre-season.
No.
That,
yeah.
I mean, listen, at 6.5 million, if he looks good in pre-season, you can put him in anyway, obviously. But it's not even auto, is it?
No.
It's not. If Kulusevski was 6.5...
It would be.
He's auto, isn't he? If Saka was 6.5, he's auto. So I think it's really unfortunate the way the fixtures have fallen as well, that it just means that everyone is probably going to head towards this template that we'll talk more about as the week goes on. And it probably means the calculated risk is coming sort of game week 6, 7. What do you add? Do you move away from the big clubs then? Or do you, even as you'd said, hold your nerve and go, do you know what? Sod it. Yeah, Liverpool playing City this week. And it's game week 11 or something. Yeah, I'm going to go with the 6 players from the 2 teams or whatever and just come out the other side.
Interesting, James, that we've managed to record the whole podcast and the game is not live. I just had a cheeky little check whilst we were recording, so we still don't know what they're going to be doing in terms of chips tomorrow. Is it pricing?
We are going to do pricing. I don't know if you want to cover, there are a handful of questions.
Oh, let's
if
do
you
it.
Want to cover a couple of them off.
This is how
we are going to look at the pricing.
I didn't even know you'd ask for questions, right, mate. There we go.
We are going to look at pricing more tomorrow, specifically
chips Thursday.
I think we've spoken about the premium, but what's your instincts at the moment just on that? Is it two premiums for you?
Do you count Cancelo, Trent as premiums?
Just from the attacking players for now.
Three.
You want to go three?
I want to go De Bruyne, Son and Haaland.
No Salah. I'm looking forward to this.
And Trent and Cancelo and Perisic. And then I don't care about the rest of the team. They can just be the cheapest crap available.
It's an interesting way to go. One of the things I've not seen much of at the moment, but I think it will take a brave person to do it. But if you go with perhaps just Salah as a premium and then really add in these 8 million guys that people won't
the
be going to
will
at
be
the start,
there.
You can do it. So if you want to just trust in Salah on the captaincy, but then I think Haaland particularly is going to be scared. He's going to be so popular.
Yeah.
Erling Haaland. I am concerned from the game's sake, from our perspective, that it's going to be template-y. But I'm sure we'll do correspondent weeks, so in a couple of weeks, and these guys will all throw up gems that will make us look in certain directions. What questions we got?
So, FPO, Quinn, Villa assets. Watkins, a viable second striker based on their opening four games?
Yeah, I think so. I think he falls into the category of player that can be considered. I think the one I'm seeing a lot is Tony, and that's completely understandable because their run, as I said, that the first two are okay. You wouldn't have expectations, I think, from Leicester away and Manchester United at home. The run afterwards is really good. And if it's a position you don't want to muck about with, I think that will probably decide what people do with it. Do people want to look at that position and go, right, yeah, I want to go Watkins for the first three, then go to Tony, for example? can be other players? Or do you want to look at it and go, I don't want to muck about with that position because I want to make sure I can go from Son to De Bruyne or something like that? That's probably going to define what people do. I think Tony's going to be the really popular one. So I think once people look beyond that that first two, the Brentford's run's good and he's consistent, isn't he?
Jarvo, are Bournemouth a complete avoid based on their first five? I was never looking at them anyway because of the availability of other players. Unless they've got like a 4 million defender that we think is definitely going to play and he's my bench fodder or balancing. I'm just not looking at them, mate.
No. I mean, look, City away, Liverpool away are their first two away games. Villa and Arsenal, the first two home games, doesn't stand out as great. But as I said, they do have a good run from game week five and it's another one to throw another name in. You could go Watkins first four, Bournemouth, Everton, Palace, West Ham, and jump that to Solanke and then spread some of the money, for example. I think he'll have a good season, Dominic Solanke. But other than that, nah. I mean, again, like you got the likes of Dunk and Sessegnon, Tomiyasu at 4.5. We can do so. Oh, yeah, Nat Phillips is a threat from set pieces. We're not picking him like with their start. It's a horrendous start. But a lot of them, like I said, switch around game week 5-6 where they may become interesting.
Ketton, do fixtures really matter for the big teams? The answer is no.
Not as such, but then consider what I said about Tottenham and the corresponding results last year. It's worth saying the Southampton Wolves home games were right after the kind of January break. And for whatever reason, at that point, it kind of looked like Conte might walk out at any point. And it wasn't right. Kulusevski and Bentancur weren't integrated into the team yet, for example. And we went to Chelsea and both teams changed systems and played a back four and it was quite weird and stuff. So it doesn't mean that we're going to get nil pois from those opening games this year. Do they matter though? Yeah, I think fixtures provide opportunity.
Last but not least, I mean, we covered a lot of the others which were about captaincy in the first couple of weeks and what have you. Nasu has a very specific question around Erling Haaland. Do you think his minutes are being overestimated, especially after game week four fixtures when the schedule gets particularly tight? And that's what we talked about in terms of Champions League.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, it's worth saying with him particularly as well, like there is an injury proneness there that we don't know if it's going to be sustainable in our league. But my instinct on it is there's so many attractive fixtures for him, even from the start and stuff, like Bournemouth at home game week two. I think first home game in front of the crowd and stuff,
Yeah, the one thing with Erling Haaland is I just think he carries a massive fear factor. I think defenders are just going to be so worried that they're going to be prone to making mistakes. Unless, of course, he comes up against like Liverpool, Van Dijk's of the world and what have you. But I think he's going to carry such a fear factor that defenders are going to make mistakes. He's going to get a lot of opportunities.
Obviously, the Community Shield will give us plenty of clues on City-Liverpool, which is helpful the week before the season starts. But say City beat Liverpool comfortably and Haaland gets a couple. Everyone's going there, aren't they?
100%.
You're going to catch him, aren't you, game week one?
That's my intention right now, yeah.
Okay.
That's my intention right now. But we shall see as we get closer to the fourth.
It's a big call. You're a good side.
I get that. And I'm thinking about, look, Zouma had a very good season last year. He's a very, very capable defender. The new boy from France, Aguerd, is rated decent. So I don't think it'll be easy for him, but City are City. And I think they're going to want to make a statement.
It's also Salah at Fulham and Kane or Son at home to Southampton. Southampton blows so hot and cold. You don't know what you... That's one of the things that puts me off Kane's Son a little bit from thinking, can I push against Salah game week one is... Don't really know what you're going to get from Southampton. They're so unpredictable.
Liverpool at home, I understand. They're home at Fulham.
It's away to Fulham.
You know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
You do. Listeners, tomorrow we'll be back at you with a pricing podcast. They're just talking about, if it's just the ones that we've had revealed, it's the ones we've had revealed. That's a good 200
Hopefully
players.
The game's open. But.
And fingers crossed, the game is open. We can look at the entire spectrum, not just... from a point of view of is this player well-priced or not, just trying to take a step back and looking at the overall pricing of all of the players and what that means for what we can and can't do as well. And if that's the case, then we'll know all about the chips. James made a reference to his spreadsheet where he has mapped out all of the fixtures and he's got a number of tabs that show the Champions League and fixture difficulty and all that kind of stuff. If you're interested in that, you can head over to patreon.com/planetfpl. All members of the community get access to that in Slack as well. And it's a very useful tool. If you like to have the fixtures out in front of you visually, it's well worth it.
I want you to sell the Patreon pod today as well.
Oh, today, James, phenomenal. You have recorded it, so you sell it. I haven't had a chance to listen to it.
I know the patrons are going to love it. I recorded with Lauren Harris, who's one of our advanced tier patrons, last night to preview not just the Women's Euros that starts tomorrow night, but just women's football generally, you know, stuff around the Women's Super League, the intended growth of the game, the potential barriers that are in the way of women's football. I said to Lauren, half hour, max 45 minutes. I had to cut her off basically after about an hour and a quarter. And it's a brilliant podcast.
Oh, fair play. So do head over to Patreon if you want to listen to that as well. Sometimes we create content for Patreon that I do feel needs to be shared with the whole world. But, you know.
Sometimes I feel we create content for Patreon that deserves having Patreon money.
Yeah, fair play. Listeners, thank you for all of your support and all of the tweets sharing yesterday's pod, welcoming us back to recording. We're going to keep it coming thick and fast. Stay safe. Ciao for now.
Thanks, everyone. Be nice to each other. Cue music, please, man child.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.